While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia, make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and a warm welcome to On the Radio News Analysis right here on Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. I'm your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and today is Wednesday, the 1st of April, 2026. Now, as the nation steps into a new month, the pace of change across Namibia continues to accelerate. Now, from shifts in our economic landscape to new ideas shaping innovation, governance and opportunity, this is where we bring it all into one focus. Now, On the Radar is not just about telling you what's happening, it's about helping you understand why it matters. Every headline has a deeper story, every policy decision carries real consequences, and every emerging trend signals where Namibia may be headed next. Now, this afternoon, we'll take a closer look at the forces shaping our country right now, unpacking key developments in business, exploring policy direction, and examining how innovation and digital transformation are redefining opportunity, especially for young Namibians. Now, we'll connect the dots between decisions made in boardrooms and parliament and the realities experienced in homes, classrooms and workplace across the country, because understanding the bigger picture isn't a luxury, it is essential. Now, over the next 1 hour and 30 minutes, expect a thoughtful analysis, informed perspectives and conversations that go beyond the surface. Now, whether you are an entrepreneur, a student, a policymaker, or simply someone invested in Namibia's future, this is your space to stay informed, engaged and ahead of the curve. So, whether you're listening from Windhoek, Walvis Bay, or Oshakati, Kathmandshoop or beyond, we are glad to have you with us. This is On the Radar on Eagle FM, not just reporting the news, but making sense of it all. Now let's get right into today's story, which I would want us to see as a case study and come back and reflect on it. Now, the Namibia Qualifications Authority, NQA, has intensified its push toward digital transformation, unveiling reforms aimed at modernizing how academic qualifications are evaluated and recognized in Namibia. Now, speaking at the information sharing session held at the by the Ministry of Health and Ministry of Information and Technology on the 31st of March 2026, the authority outlined a strategic shift toward automated and technology-driven evaluation services. The move forms part of a broader effort to improve efficiency, transparency, and global competitiveness within Namibia's education system. And here's the catch. Not just Namibia's education system, but I think any system that deals with consumers, customers, that has to, especially with information, it will be a shoot in the foot if they do not embrace digital transformation. And this is also what we call convergence, also for a company to use multiple. Now, this one is specifically talking about media houses, for instance, where they use multiple stream, multiple platforms to actually reach out to their customers. But it can be implemented similarly by companies or institutions that deal with consumers or deal with public, you know, in that type of manner, so that information is rightly available. So that if somebody in, perhaps somebody in America is able to access NQA, they want to come work in Namibia, they've already applied for their study permit and now they are having to NQA to evaluate their qualifications. It's just very necessary that they do it from the comfort of their home right in the United States, as opposed to them traveling all the way to come to Namibia. And when they are finally here, that's when the process and the running around takes place. And another point to actually take note of is that NQA only has one head office, one office, let's say, at the headquarters that is in the capital city of Windhoek. So people in Omaru, in Oshana, or Nguena had to travel all the way from those places to actually access their services, which is obviously very dragging, and also have a financial cost goes into that, and as opposed to when people can actually do whatever that they need to do from the comfort of their home. Now, the automation at the core of their reform is that central to the transformation is the introduction of an automated evaluation system that is designed to replace largely manual processes that previously required physical submission of documents. That's another big point why companies need to embrace technology and embrace AI as well. Because gone are the days when we have to stock or store a lot of documentations, as opposed to now somebody sending their documents via email or scan documents through, you know, so that cut down completely. There's no need for building storerooms to stock up on those documents and making it very difficult when we have to go back and track on those particular documents. We now have to go under sections. Then for some companies, they've been piling them up in alphabetical order, and let's say we are looking for Shilongo and we have to go to us in that particular storeroom, and you never know how really safe that is in terms of our documents probably not going to be lost, or how, you know, and stuff like that. So we need to embrace AI and embrace a digital transformation. Companies need to embrace that, because that world is now within its fourth industrial revolution, and if you're not catching up, you are definitely behind. Now, according to recent developments, the system embraces applications to track their evaluation status in real time, while also improving processing speed and accuracy. As you know, digital platforms always come with speed and accuracy. The advantage of uploading something and immediately it's up, somebody can be able to access it and view it. Now, the digital platform is expected to significantly reduce turnaround times, which traditionally took several weeks, depending on application completeness and verification requirement. Took several weeks, and if you got it right wrongly, they still have to send it back to you so you can then fix up and upload this and that. For instance, let's take an example also of NSFAF. You know, just the other day I was thinking about how NSFAF really has embraced online applications, for instance, where from the comfort, whereby they generate a user login and login numbers, so to say, as well as a user password, and all one has to do is log into that, upload their documents, upload their necessary papers that are required, and with each section to telling you, okay, do this in PDF, upload this and this and that, and the process is done like that, submitted, and all you have to do now is wait or track and follow up on your on your application, whether you've qualified and all that kind of stuff. Now, this is something that can be done by somebody in Swakopmund, in Walvis Bay, in Windhoek, in Enana, right in my house, in Onga, in the comfort of my home, and be able to do all that. And guess what? I still remain with the hard copies in case I need to use them to knock on somebody's door and look for an employment, maybe part-time employment while I wait for, you know, or whatsoever, or holiday job for the young ones, and therefore it cut costs in terms of having to send it along somebody, take this, my application to NSFAF to Windhoek, and this person might get busy, or perhaps they might misplace the documents. So really, it's time to embrace digital automation and digital AI and digital platforms. It's time to embrace all that. And as any company, I think it's only logical that we get to that point where we really realize that, hey, we are lagging behind. The world has moved on. We need to catch up with it, because it's just like in the past. If you are not having a cell phone, then you are behind. If you're wondering, you're too busy focused on how is it possible that I can be speaking to somebody on in Okakarara when I'm actually in Kathmandu. How is that possible? What's some sort of Bluetooth or witchcraft is that one? No, it's not. It is called technology. Just even when WhatsApp came into effect, I was quite young when somebody from South Africa at the time, who was way ahead of me, told me I could download WhatsApp into my phone and started using it way back before my age mates actually got to know about it. And it was quite nice because you could keep up with people who are not in the same country as you are. And right now, WhatsApp is doing so very well. We're connecting via it. You could have no airtime to call somebody, but you have data that you can easily reach up to somebody. So it's time to really embrace technology and use it, because we can still say media and technology, because those devices are what we would call media devices, then to be able to communicate with each other. So definitely that's another example. Now, getting back to NQA. Now, the NQA said alongside the automation, the NQA has introduced a national policy for qualifications standards. Now, this framework is intended to ensure consistency and credibility in how qualifications, especially those obtained abroad, on how they are assessed and aligned with Namibia's national qualifications framework. That is a national policy for qualification standards. Now, the authority maintains that evaluation remains a critical function involving verification of the legality and authenticity and comparability of qualifications to national standards. And that, my friend, is no small thing. And it's only fair for everybody involved. I mean, back in the days, we're talking about people. I personally got to witness this particular young lady who failed grade 12 terribly. And I mean terribly. I think she had 5 points in grade 12 or 10 or something like that. And just because her dad was a medical doctor, so then she went on to study abroad, and she got enrolled because the money was available, and then got enrolled in that medical course. And a year later or so, within the year actually that she was doing, she applied to come and do her practice at Katutura State Hospital. I remember because I was doing my hours as well alongside her at that particular point in time, and so people were referring to her as doctor. Of course, she's rightly so, because she's a student doctor at the time. She wore her coat and she was responsible to put up IVs. Of course, after they trained her, and she's gotten around that, and she was doing all that. But she unfortunately didn't get to finish her qualifications, because I mean, hey, it's only kind of like logical when you haven't gotten the basic knowledge of what is expected of you in the prior grade. How do you expect to do good in a bigger grade? So now it got me questioning to say, so somebody who fails here in Namibia and decides to go study abroad, when they do come back, they are treated on the very same scale. In fact, higher, on a higher scale, as opposed to one who got really good points in their grade 12 yet didn't get to go abroad. So there needs to be really some evaluation there, and that is why NQA is there to do just that, especially for qualifications that are obtained abroad. Now, aligning with global and regional trends as well. Another point that I wanted to actually see, there is a particular activist who spoke out about why NQA makes those who have gotten health qualifications outside of Namibia to write particular tests, and that are different from, and why those particular exams is the right word, the right terminology, not tests. Why Namibians, those who have gotten health qualifications at the Namibia, within Namibia, let's say for instance, hypothetically, example of from the Namibia University of Science and Technology, where they have a medical school. Now, why don't they write the very same exams as those ones outside? To be honest, from my two cents knowledge, the training ground or the training level with Namibia compared to some of these medical schools is not the same. And I'm not talking about Cuba, and I'm not talking about South Africa as well, because I know Namibia leans a lot towards South Africa, even when they are setting up, regulating how perhaps when, even when they are, let's say Namibia was even Namibia's HPCNA, sort of like that, also had its part. It pulled some things from South Africa's Health Professions Council. So, yeah, I know South Africa is quite up to standard with their evaluations as well when it comes to medical boards and medical students and what they are taught, the practicality of it. I've personally witnessed students from other places, other countries coming, and they don't even know how to put up a nebulizer. And a nebulizer, I'm referring to what we put up to somebody who is having, for instance, an asthma attack, or, you know, with symptoms perhaps of wheezing and all other stuff, whereby their airway is obstructed and they don't know the basic knowledge how to do that. For instance, I remember even practically in my very first year at university, as I was pursuing my health course, that's something that we were taught. Within 3 weeks, we knew what to do and this and that. You know, you get some medical doctors who come in and put up an IV on somebody, it's upside down, and you begin to ask yourself, what were they teaching you guys? And from what I've also heard is that they're not allowed to practice in those countries. They're sent back home, to some of them, to come and practice right in Namibia, so they don't have that knowledge. So it's quite necessary not to, I think, compare the two in such a manner to say equalize them, but rather let's stick to really getting to understand if they have the basic skills and the basic knowledge and the basic understanding that is expected of them. Nonetheless, the digital transformation is initiative by NQA reflects a broader regional and global shift in education systems towards digitalization, artificial intelligence, and flexible learning models. Now, recent engagements within the Southern Africa region have also highlighted the need for modern qualification frameworks that respond to evolving labor market demands. And I think that's the highlight of it. Now, by digitalizing its services, the NQA says it aims to position Namibia within an increasingly interconnected global education and employment landscape. I mean, like I said in the very beginning, to say somebody in the US and they want to come and work here in Namibia, and you know, we're being put on the same par, on the same scale by NQA, you know, interconnecting global education and of course also employment landscape, because we can't talk about employment landscape without talking about global education, or without talking about education. So it's really something that is worth applauding. Now, addressing past challenges, the transition also responds to long-standing operational challenges. Historically, the evaluation process relied heavily on manual submissions and physical documentation, creating delays and administrative burdens. Now, efforts to digitalize services were previously linked to funding constraints, with the authority noting the need for sustainable financial mechanisms in order to support technological upgrades. But for now, let's take a listen to Mr. Joseph Shongela, who is a manager evaluation at the NQA. Let's hear from him, and then we'll be back to still talk more on the statute.
So the automation system is a system whereby the applicants are submitting their applications online. That means they submit the application online together with the document that they want us to evaluate. Mm-hmm. So this is a new system, and comparing to the old system, the manual, so the manual system was very problematic because there were a lot of challenges. So one of them is the slow process, because document has to be passed from one office to the other, mm-hmm. from one person to the other person, and applicants were required to submit a manual document, traveling at long distances from various regions to the NQA. And as you remember, the NQA has only one office in the country, which is in Windhoek. And therefore, with this new system, people can submit their applications wherever they are. And the system, it's very efficient because the moment you submit your application, you get notified to tell you that the application is received, as well as the office will able to already notice that there is an application in, and we can start working on it. Thank you very much. And if I can just take you back to our integrated strategic business plan for 2023-24 to 2027-28. So one of the key areas that we want to focus on is on to automate our business process. Now with the automation system, so the main objective is to make sure that whatever process that gone through the evaluation, it's auditable and it's also traceable. So that means every action that is taking place during the evaluation, when the application is submitted, what time is spent to the, I mean, with the admin when he's checking the completeness of the application, as well as when the evaluation officers are doing the evaluation, what document they attached to that application to come to that conclusion. So the main thing is also for us to able to give correct and clear data, not only for the NQA, but also for the whole nation, because this information will be required anywhere for decision making, as well as for planning. The translation, I mean transition from manual to automation system, has been smooth, and because we have already been involved with the developer, so during the development, so all the employees were exposed to the user acceptance testing. So making sure that they know what is expected of them. So, and we have also a training by the developer, as well as our IT department, so that the moment...
Let's pause here now, make room for a scheduled commercial break.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no! Why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the Mimo with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
So the automation system is a system of evaluation. What document they attached to that application to come to that conclusion. So the main thing is also for us to able to give correct and clear data, not only for the NQA, but also for the whole nation, because this information will be required anywhere for decision making, as well as for planning. The translation, I mean transition from manual to automation system has been smooth. And because we have already been involved with the developer. So during the development, so all the employees were exposed to the user acceptance testing. So making sure that they know what is expected of them. So, and we have also a training by the developer, as well as our IT department, so that the moment the system activated, so we know what is expected of us. So there are also manual that are developed by the developer, so that we can able to follow. When we stuck, we can able to refer to the manual. Mm-hmm. And one very critical step is that we have also the technician on site from the developers.
Okay.
So they are there to assist, and we are also in contact with them whenever there is any problem. We are always referring to.
Okay, and the NQA says the reforms will benefit students, professionals, employers, and academic institutions by providing faster, more transparent, and internationally aligned evaluation services. Last Namibia continues to prioritize innovation in education. The authority's digital transformation clearly marks a significant step toward enhancing trust, mobility, and efficiency within the national qualifications system. Now, of course, now let's take a listen to NQA's acting CEO, Chief Executive Officer, Ms. Harmony Biekers, as she speaks on it as well. And another point, we're going to hear from her now. She does also address the aspect of cybersecurity. As much as we get excited over news like this, there is an aspect that we cannot ignore, that can't be ignored, the issue of cybersecurity threats and cybersecurity crimes. How do we perhaps navigate around those? Because as much as we're going digital, there is also an increasing number or increasing alert, and there needs to be awareness in terms of cybersecurity. Let's take a listen to Ms. Biekers now.
The reason why the NQA decided to adopt this technology at this stage in time, and I think why is it important for our stakeholders? As an country that has a strategy for advancing information technology in our systems, I think as a country we are trying to always remain abreast with the current technological advancements. And in that regard, we identified the need to use the technology to our benefit, to bring the service to our people in a way of e-service delivery. And then, of course, also to adopt technology to make work smarter. I think any business today, you look at your processes and you reevaluate them and you say, how can we improve our process to have better service delivery, more efficient service delivery? And I think that is where the NQA adopted this automated approach, where we said, look, we want to make the process more seamless. I think my colleague touched on how complicated a process it was. You physically have to go to the NQA building to submit. Now with the automated approach, you can upload your application. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is what really drive us to make this a reality for our stakeholders.
Yeah.
Thank you, Desire. I think the most important thing is we want to enhance efficiency, especially with regards to customer service. Mm-hmm. I think our customers have always, complained about the process. Mm-hmm. I want to use one example, and just to link on to what Mr. Shongela said earlier. The first thing is our customers had to do a self-follow-up at every, after submitting, you have to start now doing a follow-up yourself to hear what is the status of your application. Now, with this automation, we have the system is linked in to have some communication that will automatically be distributed through the automation. We will then acknowledge, first of all, your application. The moment that you submit it, you will get an email and you will get a SMS communication. This really enhances, communication also throughout the process, so that I don't have to sit there and wonder when will NQA be responding to me about my application. But throughout the process, there's different layers of communication that is happening automatically. The one challenge we have is our stakeholders, not all our citizens have access to, internet and to submit their application. So we have taken into consideration that during the, and also, you know, you need to, in any change, you need to manage that change through providing for a transition. Yes. So we are changing over from a manual process into an automated process. So what we have agreed at institutional level is that we will support our stakeholders through this process. And of course, we are a public institution, so we do reach out to our key stakeholders, regional offices, and so on. Throughout the manual process as well, we have been in constant contact. So now we are also establishing that network so that they can be support at regional level as well, especially for those in the rural areas that have limited access, as you've indicated. Yeah. What we've also in-house agreed is that we will continue to have our front desk available during this period of transition to assist anyone that is struggling to, you know, submit their application. They can come into the NQA office. We can assist them to upload an application on our internet. And I think other government entities have also taken this approach. And I think for the interim, it is a mechanism that we have also put in place in order to ensure that everyone still has an opportunity. But the only thing I want to say here is it's very critical that an applicant must have a contact detail, such as an email address. And you will open your profile. And this is a digital profile that you open for yourself, for you as an applicant of NQA. So now afterwards, you have your login details. And with these login details, you can now access your application and the status of your application from wherever you find yourself. Yeah. So if I'm assistant, let me say, maybe it's difficult for me because of network challenges to upload my documents. I can go to a government office and be assisted. Mm. But then afterwards, I need to be able to view maybe my application, my profile on my mobile device. And maybe that connectivity is not required to be so strong. Yes. So then you still have access. Yeah. The only thing here is...
And how...
Talk to our customers throughout the entire process. I think that's number one. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest challenge with customer service delivery is when a customer is unaware or left in the dark during a process. I think that is something that, or not left in the dark, because in our manual process, we talk to our customers. But for example, perhaps we did not do it as, proactively as it should have been. Mm. Or because we had such a number of applications and it was going to require a manual intervention on every application. Mm. And now with our system automation, we are able to send quick messages throughout. And a customer can have access to this information. We are not mailing it to you through the mail and you receive that letter only after 3 months. Immediately when you submit and your documents are verified, a message is loaded into your profile. Mm. So that type of efficiency is something that I think was not there in the manual process. But at an organizational level, it also enhances our efficiency and it also, allows us to track applications throughout our entire process. Yeah. We are able to tell on a daily basis that we have received this number of applications yesterday. Mm-hmm. And because it's immediate... it's immediate information capturing. Mm-hmm. As the applicant, load my documents, the system is capturing that data. Mm-hmm. That data is immediately available within an hour. Okay. Just an example. Yes. Actually, immediately. Yeah. But say, for example, within an hour, we want to track how many applications we receive. Like from the first day that we launched the system and went live, we are able to track on a daily how many applications we are receiving, how many applications we have finalized, how many applications are at what stage of delay or whatever. Mm. And this allows us to intervene more effectively. Because, in a manual process, some documents are on one desk, some documents are on another desk, and you are not always aware of the exact detail.
Yeah.
But now with an automated system, we are aware of the exact number of applications in our system. Mm-hmm. The other thing is with efficiency, the process becomes the speed of the processing becomes faster. Yeah. And that is something that our clients really require. One of the things is, if I need an evaluation for my qualification, I need it for another purpose. Mm. Usually I am in the process of applying for a student permit, mm-hmm. or I'm in the process of applying for student placement, mm. or an employment.
Yeah.
But now, because of the manual process, the delays in an application were, it's delayed in time, and therefore impacted my need.
Yes.
So now with an automated process, we are more efficiently attending to the applications, because as we speak here, the two of us, the moment that we go back in the office, we can open our dashboard and we can see what application is at what stage and where do we need to intervene. That also allows us at management level to intervene and ensure that process efficiency is acquired, because we can now take up with the level where an application, the bottlenecks, where it is stuck. We can see what is the reason for this delay, why is it taking so long, and we can also then assist. That is how we see the efficiency improving. But also at an organizational level, it helps us with reporting, because now that we have data, it helps us with reporting and identifying trends. Mm. Because when we automated the system, we have data that is requested usually on our application form. Mm. Now we can see how many from a specific gender have requested for evaluation, in what field of study. Mm. We'll be able to also through efficiently now report on the data, not specific to an individual, but generally, as a country, we can now tell how many qualifications did we evaluate, which fields of study. For example, we evaluate so many qualifications in law, and then we can say, out of this number of evaluations, how many were female, how many were male, how many were in which age group, because of the data. So really, I think not the direct personal data, but the overall data collection is also very good for the institution.
Yes.
And we are now able to report more accurately.
Exactly.
That is something that I think is also enabling the efficiency of the institution. The system that we have adopted or built this platform on is Microsoft, which is a well-established software that enables digital transformation.
Mm-hmm.
I think as a country, we have also adopted it. I was just sitting here when listening to Mr. Shonghela, thinking about the issues that are sometimes also impacting us when we submit applications or during this transition. One of it is digital literacy. I think most of our stakeholders are exposed to Microsoft, and therefore the system is very simplified and built according to that. As we are aware, with regards to protecting data and integrity of data, I think there we have Microsoft, we have the normal, let's say we have the general, I don't want to go into the exact details now of names, but I think I just want to say we have the general security features that we need to put in place for any system. So with regards to this system, we have the general, like our firewalls, that usually is required for institutions, and then other data security features. I don't have the exact details, so I won't be going into them. I just want to say we did make provision for it.
Mm-hmm.
As with all our, NQA is a public institution. We adhere to all the requirements for data safety. Mm-hmm. Not only data safety, but general our cyber safety.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So our institution is established. We have those systems in place and frameworks in place. And in our ICT policies, we have provision for it. Our staff are also trained on it, so that we can always continuously look out for these, concerns. With regards to data integrity, we just want to say something. And this links back to what Mr. Shonghela indicated earlier about the, we now have a QR scanner on the certificate. Now, what happened in the past, and I think, I'll also just use the opportunity to do a bit of public education.
Yes, please.
What happened in the past, if I have my evaluation certificate and it ends up on someone's table, then they need to verify with NQA manually to ask, is it true? Did you indicate that Ms. Beerkes has the following qualification and comparable to this level? Because what is happening in all over the world, there is also not only forging of qualification documents, but also evaluation reports mm-hmm. and certificates. And this is something that we also picked up already, that our evaluation certificates have been, you know, forged. Here and there we have been approached and we've picked up. And usually it's employer bodies that will come through mm-hmm. or our regulators. And they'll say, someone brought this evaluation to us. Can you verify the authenticity? Mm-hmm. And when we go to our records, there's nothing like that. They copied yours. So now what is happening with this now, data integrity, it's we brought in the QR provision so that anybody, where I submit my evaluation report, that employer mm-hmm. can scan it and immediately verify the authenticity.
Wow. Nice.
And I think this data is protected. So you can only verify it, but you can't access it. So you can't go into the file of the person.
Yes.
The other thing is, I think it's very important that we all need to take hands. Desire, if I am now the applicant, I open a portfolio, a profile, sorry, for myself, the way I will be submitting and uploading my documents. My profile data, login data, I need to keep it secure.
Yeah.
Because someone else can log in on my behalf and access my document. Of course, they won't be able to forge it now because of the verification mm-hmm. detail that is in. Because you can't make your own certificate. It's only that we are now able to verify it, yes. the authenticity of that certificate. But my data that is in there, you know, can be stolen if I don't protect also my login details. So we all need to take hands. It is a continuous mechanism that we need to put in place on a regular.
Mm-hmm.
The entity also needs to continuously train our users, both our stakeholders and our internal users on cybersecurity and the risks around data security, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's something that we do have in place, but we also continuously need to work to close all the gaps.
Mm-hmm. I think the fact that you're speaking of each doing their part,
yes.
I think it's the most important factor. As yes. the world is moving fast, as I said or I alluded to earlier on, digital transformation is basically taking place all over the place.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we cannot run away from it.
Yes.
There's no way where I can say I'm not going to be involved in it or I'm not going to, you know, step onto the bandwagon.
Yes.
So importantly, it's for us to practice, you know, cybersecurity, being cybersecurity savvy.
But of course, now let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. This is On The Reader News Analysis.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Lipuranenge no wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maundu tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite okoye ekukurile. Oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewetike kovano ile koshiwana. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa. Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudini tayo loka. Opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali. Ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafelane Eagle FM the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now for some economic indicators before we get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. US dollar is equals to 16 Namibian dollars point 79 cents. One Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 68 cents. One United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars and 57 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 22 Namibian dollars and 37 cents. While one Chinese yuan is equals to, One Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 24 cents. Of course, that we had for you in terms of economic indicators. Let's now brace ourselves for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Of course, for news beyond the borders of Namibia, we will start off regionally, move over to continental news. Thereafter, international news comes our way. Meanwhile, in South Africa, there's a focus on road safety during the Easter holidays. Now, of course, Easter holidays are known to come with quite high numbers of accidents over the weekend. So there's a need to educate and create awareness yet still this time around.
Let's take you to Mpumalanga now as we continue watching developments along the major arterials. Traffic high volumes expected on provincial routes as holidaymakers and churchgoers start making their way to different destinations ahead of the Easter long weekend. Authorities are calling on motorists and public transport operators to ensure that their vehicles at the very least are roadworthy. Let's get you more on the ground with SABC News reporter Tumelo Machogo, who once again joins us now live from Komartipoort, is where you were at initially. Tumelo, help us place where you are now and what the interventions there look like.
Well, indeed, we're still here at Lebombo port of entry with Mozambique, where the BMA are actually going to be ensuring that they beef up their securities, especially now that a lot of travelers, they will be heading to Mozambique for the Easter break, especially those who are Mozambicans working and living in South Africa, but also South Africans who will be traveling to Mozambique to actually go and travel to the beach and to the sea. As you know, Mozambique is known for these pristine beaches and and also tourism attractions there. So a lot of tourists will be traveling to that direction. But also here, the Border Management Authority is working with different companies to ensure that actually they beef up securities. These are armored vehicles that the BMA is actually just going to be using to ensure that they also patrol the border line, to ensure that there is also safety on the road, especially also on the road as we head to these Easter break. But let's now bring in Peter Breitenbach. Peter, just talk to us about, you are the company that actually assisting now the BMA with these armored vehicles to ensure that they put their personnel in these vehicles to patrol through the borderline, but also to patrol through the N4. Why did you guys want to be involved with this initiative to actually help the BMA?
Okay, we've initially designed these vehicles, the Matla vehicles, for border patrol issue management. So we want them to participate in the vehicles and see if this vehicles satisfy their equipment.
And also you are giving them 3 vehicles and you started on Monday. What has been the success and where have you guys been, especially on the borderline? Because we know the borderline at some point is very porous and people are just coming in and out.
Yes, we've been on the borderline, certain areas where we've detected some people crossing over the borderline illegally. And they've also been detected by our drones operating in the area. So we've taken the BMA people there to actually counterpart them and bring them back to the border post.
And also the success that you've guys, you said you arrested people on the borderline with BMA, and also what else have you been able to discover? Because not only the people that are traveling here that wanted to cross illegally, but some of them, they will want to bring illicit goods.
Yes, we've located on the N4, just past the border. We've located some vehicles that has got illegal substances that have been brought over the border post.
But also, just talk to us, these vehicles now, are you giving them officially to the BMA, or are you only assisting them during this busy period, or what's going to be happening going forward?
At this moment, we are just assisting them for this period, and then from there on, there will be further talks on how we will assist them going forward.
But talk to me, these are armored vehicles, they can go anywhere, so meaning they can travel through the borderline, can go all the way into the mountainous areas. Just to explain to us, what do these vehicles contain, and what can they do and help, especially with the military, because the militaries are also going to be using this, I'm sure, the SNDF plus the border management authorities officials.
Yes, correct. These are 4x4 high mobility vehicles that can be deployed very fast. They are actually troop carriers, so armored personnel carriers. They can carry between 9 and 11 people depending on the application. So they are here to deploy our people to certain areas at a very fast point.
And also high clearance, they can see from a far distance.
Yes, you can see from a far distance, and you can also check from the roof where there's hatches. And the vehicles can also be equipped with other equipment like cameras and everything that will also assist them.
And also, during this period, obviously, it's quite busy, and but have they been able to maneuver very correctly and have been able to use this vehicle correctly as you have been working with them throughout since Monday?
Yes, the vehicles are very, very fast and maneuverable. So we've been helping them since Monday, going through the traffic, going through the rural areas, and all the, obviously, the...
It's Paul CNH, and I take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with news beyond the borders. Stay tuned.
Efiloshisho, otali kulandula kona avewa yuka. Ekwashili pale kolo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHB. Watupa teleko meshwe kwashili pale kolo afika mafio $5 emiliona omlongo danamibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja oma kwa fo unamiti enashane filo shisholo pa ulumo mumbu. Kwa avoveli ponje yoshilongo, shijoshi topor washo ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe bionando isho shayash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis maule o minute disyonaelela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya moruendo. Ponjeo Shilong, mangono malandula fano, o dodino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Care that builds with you. That's the rollover benefit from NHP. When you claim less than a defined amount of your day-to-day benefits in a year, the unused amount is carried over for the next year, like a savings account for your health. You can use your rollover benefit in many ways, from co-payments to medical costs usually not covered, even contribution holidays. Learn more at nhb.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHB, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHB, we're about you.
Welcome back. Now, meanwhile, sadly, speaking about the Easter weekend and accidents and the high number of accidents that come with it, not just within Namibia, but also in South Africa as well. South Africa has reported 5 dead people in Modibaya and 1 crash. Let's take a listen to that one.
Confirmed dead following a collision between a buggy and a light motor vehicle on the N1 near Mudimulle. That's in Limpopo. The cause of the crash is still unclear. Emergency services personnel are still at the scene, though. Let's get you a sense of what else we know with SABC News reporter Katlego Nyoni, live to us now from the scene in Mudimulle. And Katlego, it's not looking good at all.
It is certainly not looking good, Ayanda. This accident scene had just occurred. We understand right now from unconfirmed reports from officials indicating that 5 people have lost their lives. This is an accident involving a buggy as well as a light vehicle. From what we understand, as they say that all the information currently at their disposal is preliminary, further indicating that some of the bodies have not yet been taken to or have not yet been seen by pathologists, and that they are unable to confirm the overall number of deaths. But what we understand at this particular moment, Ayanda, is that this accident is still fresh. As you can see, emergency vehicles are here on the scene, and emergency workers are still working on removing some of the remains of the people that have lost their lives in this tragic accident. You see also the movement of vehicles on the N1 stretch between Mokopong as well as Mudimulle. This is before the Grantskop toll gate, after the Grantskop toll gate. You see that the flow of traffic is indeed being redirected by officials. You also understand that the northern lane going into Polokwane is the one that will likely be impacted. As you can see on your screen there, Ayanda, this accident has occurred on the direction, or rather the scene is being cleared on the direction leading towards Polokwane, whereas southbound direction on that lane has not yet been interrupted. But from the looks of things, there will be a temporary closure, Ayanda, between this stretch of roads. This as rescue workers try to comb the scene as well. And we also don't have confirmed reports of the number of people that may have been injured. But from the preliminary information that we are receiving is that this was an accident between a buggy as well as a light vehicle on this stretch of road, resulting to a number of people dying as a result of that particular crash. The cause of the accident is still yet to be determined. As we pointed out, this is a fresh scene. We also received information ourselves earlier on, and we immediately rushed to the scene. So officials from the Department of Transport as well as the police are still finalizing the statement. We'll be obviously here, Ayanda, to continue monitoring these developments. As we understand, there's been a loss of life. We are into the Easter season. 2 days from now, Friday is essentially Good Friday. We're anticipating also that traffic volumes will increase in the Limpopo province, as many come into the Limpopo province for things like the Easter pilgrimage at the ZCC church. So certainly the movement of traffic in the Easter period will be quite high, and officials say that there will be heightened visibility from their side. And this accident, Ayanda, just a few days shy of the official start of the Easter season, is certainly quite a sad reminder to all of us that we should all drive safely on our roads, Ayanda.
Yeah, and of course, we're still trying to establish the facts, Katlego, but I wonder if you're able to help us place, geographically speaking, where this has happened and how that could complicate that flow of those travelers, as you've mentioned, especially given that we're just days away from Easter.
Certainly. So this is the N1 stretch of road after one of the busiest toll gates in the Limpopo province, that is Grantskop toll gate, on a stretch of road several kilometers away from the town of Mudimulle. And to the north, Going further north is the town of Omokhobong. So this accident has occurred on that particular stretch of road just before one of the many bridges that intersect on the N1 route. So you see the traffic that is moving northerly is being redirected on a single lane, as well as the traffic that is headed towards the town of Mudimole is also now utilizing a single lane. As you can see, that large truck over there even maneuvering touching some part of the gravel, indicating that there is a lack of driving space here, and officials are working on partially closing in the lane going into the northern side, the northern part, that is the town of Mudimule. However, we are still awaiting that confirmation from officials in the department. They say they will also finalize the overall number of people that have lost their lives in this tragic accident. But from what we understand, preliminary information revealed that it could be 5 people that have lost their lives. Ayanda, so this stretch geographically between the two towns, Mudimule as well as Mokhobong in Limpopo.
And from what you know, Katleho, is that stretch of road prone to these kinds of accidents?
Certainly, Ayanda, this stretch of road is considered a high accident zone, particularly if you move south towards the town of Mudimule. There is a sharp curve. It's considered a high accident zone going into the town of Mokhobong as well, in both directions, as well as going into the town of Mudimule is considered a high accident zone. We have in the past covered a number of accidents between the stretch of road leading all the way to the town of Mokobani. Certainly there have been a number of accidents leading into high casualties that we have seen in previous years. Numbers went high as 17 people that have perished in a taxi that has collided and caught fire. There have been a number of accidents here that claimed multiple lives. So it's indeed a quite dangerous, if you may say, stretch of road. So motorists are always cautioned to drive safe in this particular stretch of roads. There are even signs indicating to motorists using this particular stretch of road that it is indeed a high accident zone and that motorists need to exercise caution. That message yesterday, we interviewed the Deputy Minister of Transport, Mr. Mkhule Kohlengwa, who emphasized.
Meanwhile, the cost of living, Minister Gondwana of South Africa has announced a temporarily 3 rand fuel levy cut.
Now, South Africans are facing a significant cost of living squeeze. This is massive fuel price hikes came into effect and also electricity tariff increases. And all of that happening today. Now, South Africans will fork out more for electricity. Eskom implementing an average electricity tariff increase of 8.76%, and that for direct customers. And if you are buying from the municipality, that increase looking more like 9.1%. Now, this is the first of many annual increases, with a further 8.83% increase having already been approved for April next year. Meanwhile, an increase in the price of fuel also came into effect. Both grades of petrol went up by 3 rand 6 cents per litre, while diesel shot up by between 7 rand 37 cents and 7 rand 51 cents per litre. Illuminating paraffin, that saw the highest increase on record of 11 rand 67 cents per litre. So to help us look at the implications of all of these increases to consumers, we're joined virtually now by Chief Economist at the Efficient Group, Davi Ruit. Davi, good to have you with us again here on Morning Live. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Good morning to you.
So Davi, we've had a lot to talk about regarding this impact of these shocks on the consumer. But I guess it's also important that we continue to look at the broader economy and what the overall impact is on everyone concerned here.
Yeah, okay, I can give you a couple of numbers, some estimates that I've made. I've updated my economic models, but things could change so quickly. I mean, only a month ago, I was actually relatively optimistic about the outlook for the South African economy. The Minister of Finance predicted 1.6% economic growth in his budget, which I thought was a little bit on the high side, but not unachievable. So things looked not too bad about a month or so ago, but everything changed and everything has been postponed by a month or by a year at least. I'm talking about the consolidation of fiscal accounts and stuff like this. But here are a few numbers. So in February, we saw the inflation rate exactly at 3%. The Reserve Bank is very happy about that because that's what we are targeting. In March, we should see inflation going up a little bit, about 3.3%. And that's not because of the international. That's water under the bridge. So the March numbers will be a little bit higher. Apologies. And then the real shocker is going to be in April. In April, we get all these various price increases. And I'm afraid inflation is likely to accelerate to 4.5%. 5% even, and the month thereafter, another very big increase in petrol price can further be expected, by the way, assuming the oil price remains where it is. So inflation is going to become a major problem. So the Reserve Bank decided to keep interest rates unchanged last week, but I'm afraid with inflation running close to 5, wherever, I don't know where it's going to turn, the Reserve Bank certainly will start increasing interest rates. So I think in 2 months' time, we will see an interest rate increase, and 2 months thereafter, perhaps another increase in interest rates. And that means the economy is not going to grow by 1.6 as the minister estimated. I think we should be lucky if we see 1% this year. And that means further upward pressure on unemployment, further increase in poverty in South Africa, a further deterioration of per capita GDP, and those sort of things. So that is just the reality of what we are facing. And unfortunately, we do not have much dry ammunition. I'm very much against this reduction in the fuel levy, and we can talk about that. Fortunately for us, there's some dry ammunition in the form of the Reserve Bank. So interest rates are relatively high already. So we're not talking about huge increase in interest rates, but we're talking about some increase in interest rates because interest rates are already relatively high. But in the case of the fiscal accounts, what the Minister of Finance is responsible for, there simply isn't dry ammunition. The fiscal accounts are on heading for a disaster. The debt levels are getting out of hand. And that's the reason why I'm against this, part of the reason why I'm against this fuel levy reduction. So we are heading for some difficulty. Only a month ago, I saw some green shoots, but I'm afraid all of those are probably gone now. And we will have to wait another year before we can see a little bit better economic growth again. Mm.
And Davi, you know, as you say, essentially there's no thing such as a free lunch. So whilst we might be celebrating government intervention with regard to the fuel price hike right now, this is money that will be missed by the fiscus. It's money that somehow government is going to have to make up somewhere, somehow.
Exactly. That is exactly the point. Let me just repeat what I've just said. The fiscal accounts are unsustainable. The debt to GDP ratio has gotten out of hand. The Minister of Finance knows this and he wanted to consolidate the fiscal accounts. And that was possible until about a month or so ago. That simply means that the Minister of Finance cannot afford to lose any revenue. So we might have dodged this bullet. But this is going to come around and it will bite us. So somewhere in future, there will be an increase in taxes or the Minister of Finance must cut back on state expenditure, which of course politically is very difficult, but that what needs to happen. Or the Minister of Finance can borrow more money. But if he does that, then the debt problem becomes even bigger. Also keep in mind, like I've said, the economy is unlikely to grow at 1.6%, significantly lower perhaps. And that means that the debt to GDP ratio will move in the wrong direction as well. I think this was the wrong decision to reduce the fuel levy because it's only temporary. It is just cheap politics, to be quite honest about this. And it is going to come back. And in the end, we, the consumer, will be paying for that. There is an alternative, however, that I think we probably missed that alternative. And the alternative would have been to simply to prevent Eskom from increasing prices. I mean, it is totally unacceptable for Eskom to increase by 9% and even more for some other customers.
Meanwhile, e-payments are gaining traction in Malawi.
E-payment is a rapidly growing industry in Malawi as more and more people choose to use mobile money as a form of payment to conduct their transactions. Malawi's national switch or NetSwitch concept has simplified this and is an interoperable backbone for banks and non-bank providers. With a population of over 22 million, most Malawians have moved to e-payment using mobile money as a way of seamlessly transacting within the economy.
The absorption of payment in Malawi has been tremendous. And there's been an increase in the absorption and the usage, because when you look at the numbers by the Reserve Bank of Malawi, it shows that from 2015 and up to 2025, there's been an exponential growth. For example, there were only 2 million Malawians who were using e-payments or they were using e-wallets. That number surged to 13 million by 2023, thereabout. But when you look up until 2025, by March 2025, the number grew to 17.6 million Malawians. In fact, between March to June 2025, this number grew from 17.6 million to around 20.1 million.
With the move to a more digitized economy, there is broad adoption of e-payments, both in the formal and informal sectors. The agricultural sector has also adopted e-payment for its cotton and tea industries. This is supported by the Reserve Bank of Malawi, which has mandated that all licensed businesses offer at least one electronic payment, boosting adoption. Vendors, taxis and retail businesses all accept e-payment, as it allows for quicker transactions to take place without the need for cash deposits by businesses at banks.
The moment people buy the batteries here, there are several modes of payment they use. One of the payments they use is mobile transactions. People here, they are allowed, customers, they are allowed to pay using their mobile phones. I'm happy with the mobile transaction because I'm not wasting my time going to deposit it at the bank.
For now, through the government's Malawi digitization project, it is improving connectivity and integrating electronic payments into government services for social cash transfer programs, which is expected to improve transparency. Revs Andrews, CGTN.
Meanwhile, Tanzania sees a rapid growth in high-speed internet.
Internet cables such as these are becoming an increasingly common sight across many streets in major Tanzanian cities. According to Tanzania's telecoms regulator, as of December last year, fiber to the home connections had grown to 139,000, a 157% increase over the past 2 years. For many industry players, changing times are offering significant room for growth.
We didn't have the tablets, we didn't have all that. But right now, people are using smart homes, smart fridges. So with that kind of growth, there's no way that this industry is going to saturate at any time. Not anytime soon.
The government claims the growing demand for fiber internet is down to a conducive business environment that has also brought some price stability.
Wastani wa bei ya data, bila kifurushi.
The average cost of data outside bundle packages has remained at less than half of 1 cent per megabyte. Furthermore, this trend indicates a continued increase in access to communication and information technology services in areas that were previously underserved. This progress has also enabled citizens to access various digital, social and economic services such as healthcare and financial services more easily and quickly.
According to Tanzania's telecoms regulator, fiber to the office subscriptions have also seen significant growth, rising by up to 217% over the past 2 years, as demand for faster, more reliable internet increases. This, it says, reflects steady growth in overall internet penetration, with subscriptions reaching 58.6 million in the last quarter of 2025, largely driven by broadband services.
The relatively low cost of subscriptions, around $19, along with the promise of faster upload and download speeds, is attracting a growing number of Tanzanians to fiber internet. Authorities believe that increased fiber penetration is key to expanding digital entrepreneurship, online learning, and even remote work.
Despite this progress, industry players say hard-to-reach areas are slowing down expansion efforts.
The infrastructure and the capital that is involved in getting to those is a little bit different from going into an area that is just straightforward. So, yeah, there are challenges that we come across. And in the market, there are times where we have to put our heads together as players to be able to serve an area.
The government says it plans to connect all wards in the country with fiber optic cables by the end of this year. That will be challenging in a country the size of Tanzania, but is a key target for the goal of a digitally driven economy. Isaac Lukando, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Meanwhile, India faces fertilizer shortage risk as the Middle East conflict escalates.
As farmer Deshpal Dahia gets ready to tend his crops in the field, he is worried. The fear of a shortage of fertilizers in the upcoming summer season threatens not just the yield, but also his livelihood. The Iran, US and Israel war has disrupted the supply of fertilizers, raising import costs for buyers like India.
I want to request the government to make alternative arrangements, as a shortage of fertilizer will lead to food shortages. If we don't have enough nutrients for the soil, the yield will be affected. Less production will lead to a food security crisis in the country.
India's food security is heavily dependent upon fertilizer supplies from West Asia, making it vulnerable to disruptions in the region. With no end in the sight to the escalating conflict, the fertilizer crisis is deepening.
There will be a major shortage of DAP, an important ingredient during rice sowing. Urea will also be in short supply as the amount we manufacture requires a large amount of gas. With the gas supply affected, urea production will be low.
We have already been facing a shortage of fertilizers. We don't get them when we want. The government has already put a cap on the supply. If the conflict continues, then the farmers will face problems and the rates might go up.
According to the officials, India currently has sufficient fertilizer reserves. In a few weeks, the summer sowing season will begin, raising demand for fertilizers. The government has a short window to find solutions if the war drags on.
This is the time that government of India has to look for solutions. So this is really that moment, that when you need to basically set up a high-level committee and sit down and figure out what are you going to do if you don't have enough urea.
Farmers like Dahia are watching the war closely, knowing their future depends on a smooth supply of fertilizers. They expect a timely government intervention to safeguard livelihoods and agricultural stability. Ravinder Bawa, CGTN, Delhi.
And now listen to how ordinary people worldwide are paying the price of Iran, of the Iran conflict and the Strait of Hormuz shutdown.
The entire global economy has been taken hostage.
The single most important solution to this problem is opening up the Hormuz Strait.
چندین ساله هیچ اتفاقی در تنگه هرمز نیفتاده بود چون ایران یه پای امنیت
We're double any other nation and it's going to be soon triple any other nation
By now, most people are familiar with this narrow stretch of water, the Strait of Hormuz, a gateway for one-fifth of the planet's entire oil supply and a crucial shipping route once moving 20 million barrels a day. Yet its highlighted significance isn't about what's happening across its waterways, but what's not. This passageway, which is de facto controlled by Iran, is effectively closed, a valve shut on energy. It's resulted in volatile oil prices and shockwaves felt throughout global markets.
We're going to see a very big jump in prices in every single material around the world.
There are countless layers to these ripple effects. But without getting into all of that, it's instead worth examining how far-reaching those impacts are. Many are being felt thousands of kilometers away, with subsequent pains on local markets, consumers, and industries. One such place is Sudan. Food security is already fragile for the sub-Saharan country. Combined with conflict, the disruption of oil exports is threatening Sudan's agriculture industry and farmers, specifically in the form of fertilizer. And natural gas is a key ingredient.
We're already struggling to afford fertilizer. If prices go higher or supplies stop, we won't be able to produce enough food.
Higher prices could mean reduced usage, often leading to lower crop yields. The consequences are clear. This could extend beyond agriculture, hitting food prices, household incomes, and even national economies.
The prolonged closure of the strait is choking the movement of oil, gas, and fertilizer at a critical moment in the global planting season.
Much of the African continent is shouldering these burdens. Mauritius and South Sudan introducing energy-saving measures and electricity rationing. In Uganda, diesel and petrol stocks sufficient for less than a month. And in South Africa, panic buying with a spike in purchases, as many expect prices to keep rising. That type of reactive consumer behavior is not exclusive to farmers and ordinary people across various parts of Africa. Nearly 4,000 kilometers away, parts of Eastern Europe are also feeling the pinch. The Slovenian government has released some of its strategic reserves, but this move isn't something entirely new to the Slovenian people.
They still remember the 2022 when the prices were higher for a longer period of time, so they're somehow hoarding the gasoline if they can.
Gas stations have put out warnings on limited supplies of certain fuels, and even modest purchase restrictions have been imposed. Yet, it's a mixed reaction from some motorists.
Yes, Mr. Dato. Чист без визи. Тук че се за 10 центов подражени и това бе на катастрофа, сигурен да.
Želim, da bi rezerve že spustili, pa da bi mesec prej nabavili zaloge, tiste, ki se je pričakovalo, da bo težava.
International agencies and governments have heeded this sentiment. Just 2 weeks into the conflict, members from the International Energy Agency agreed to release a record 400 billion barrels of oil to curb rising prices.
It is only 20% of our overall stocks. Our stock release will help to comfort the markets, but this is not the solution. It will only help to reduce the pain on the economy.
Leaders recognize that this is merely a temporary fix. How long it may hold is anyone's guess. But the impacts being felt throughout European economies, those may have a scarring effect.
The situation is critical for the energy supplies worldwide. We all feel the knock-on effects gas and oil prices, our businesses and our societies.
Recent reports on consumer confidence across the Eurozone point to pessimism. And towards the final week of March, European shares have slipped. Much of this stems from elevated crude prices and uncertainty surrounding the month-long conflict. For now, Europe will not only have to grapple with its oil import dependency, but where it sources it from. On the other side of the world, that bleak outlook has taken hold of one of the world's fastest growing regions, a region that is highly dependent on energy imports. Economic woes are being felt across nearly every part of Southeast Asia.
But we end the for today. Let's pause here now. And of course, hand over the mic to Loise Shimi for the Onkonana Dengue program. From Indafa Epijuju, that's goodbye.